Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Raiders make the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Reiner to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, the volleyball team making a deep run in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. A cross-country runner competing at the national championships over the weekend. Men's and women's hoops, both in action. Meanwhile, football has clinched a winning season. They picked up win number 7. Over the weekend, a 28-21 victory over ULM. A-State now 7-4 on the season. They're 5-2 in Sun Belt Conference play. Talk about all the details of that game coming up a little bit later on. But coming up this weekend, 29 players will be honored on Senior Day. And one of them is joining us right now. It's senior tight end Manny Stevenson. How you doing, Manny?
Good. How about you?
Really glad you're here with us today, because we were just talking about it off the air. This team is now 6-0 in one-score games this season. The only team in the country that can say they're 6-0 in one-score games.
Yeah.
So why is that? In your opinion, why is this team so good in close games?
Well, thank y'all for having me. 1-2, we built this from the start, the 2-10 season, the 3-9, we built this from connection, toughness, discipline, and the love for each other. So I think when you have all those things combined together, it just helps you get through those tough times when some certain teams aren't as connected as us. They could be better, have more skill, but we feel like at the end of the day, we've built the time over the summer, over the spring to get to know each other, knowing your neighbor, knowing your teammates, your coaches, so that you can push that extra mile when we're in the fourth quarter with 2 minutes left and we need to score, or it's a 2-minute situation and we don't have any timeouts. We got to win the game. So it just makes you dig deeper to help your teammates and do it for your team.
What's interesting in that 6-0 is that it is this mix of you guys going down and scoring to win, or the last couple have been the defense making a stop to seal a win.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been done both ways. So kind of what's that say, or how does it speak to the confidence of the group that no matter which side needs to go out and seal a win, that you're going to go get it done?
Yeah, so every week we do 2-minute drill, and I feel like each side of the ball has their days, like who wins and who doesn't. So I feel like the more we've done it, even over fall camp, we will do 2-minute drill or last drive of the game, 4-minute drill. So I feel like with those situations built in and us working together as a team, we built the trust in one another and the connection to be able to depend on everybody to do their job.
So you guys, you just said it, and Coach says a lot, well, we work on that every week. But my guess is so do a whole lot of people.
Teams, yeah.
So what makes it different for you guys? How are you guys been so good at then taking that from the practice field to executing it when it matters?
I think it's the little details. Even if we do have successful times in 2 minutes, there's still always little details we got to focus in and hone in on, and there's always things that we need to improve on. And I think that's why each week we keep getting better and keep being able to push out through these last minute drives and last minute quarter games, because we don't just get satisfied with, you know, the end result, it being good. We still focus on what happens in between the plays, between the whistle. If your punch is off, your steps are wrong, your footwork's bad, we still focus on that no matter if it's a good result or a bad result. So I think that's what's been helping us.
Well, and one thing too, I mean, you've been part of this since Coach Jones came in, and you've seen how the entire culture has turned around, and that's a big part of it. But, you know, 2 years ago, your sophomore season, the team won 3 games, but you led in the fourth quarter in 8 of those games. And mm-hmm. I know that was such a huge emphasis going into the following offseason, just being able to finish those games. And man, you guys definitely got that corrected. I mean, just the whole fourth quarter mentality seems to be completely different now.
Yeah, I think it started in practice where we would take parts of practice a little bit more serious, even though the whole practice is serious, obviously. But we knew that from the past seasons that the fourth quarter was our struggle point in the games, and we never used to finish out games. So every practice we'll have this portion in time where we'll throw the wolves up and, you know, represent the fourth quarter because we know we got to push through practice. That's got to be the best part of the day. So I think us making it a point of emphasis for the year, I think it's helped everybody, like, change the mindset. Once we get in the fourth quarter, like, it's on. We got to push through and win this game no matter what.
Look, I understand. Like, people, you know, fans, maybe in the media or people on the outside, they're going to hear things over and over, and they're going to think that they're just kind of catchphrases or coach speak. If it's trust the process, mm-hmm. or if it's play into a standard, not to the score. But this is where you see the real life, kind of, you see that in action, and the fact that, you know, trust the process is just that, like you said, so what, we've gone and we've done it every time, and so far it's gone right. It hadn't been perfect. Trust the process is what you guys work on, is just like, if over the course of that football game, if you go do everything you're supposed to do right, mm-hmm. then you look up and, oh, by the way, we won because of that. Yeah. Instead of like, oh, gosh, we're up or we're down, we got to go do X, Y, Z. It's just, I got to do the thing I'm doing right now right, and if that happens enough, then in the end we win.
Yeah, and in the day, is everybody does their 111. You know, if everybody does their job, there's no way the play doesn't work because everything is equal. Like, we all work together, all on a string, so it's just doing your 111 for real.
This team now has 7 straight wins at home and a chance Saturday to do something really cool, going for an undefeated season. And if that happens, it'll be the first time in 13 years that's happened for an A-State team. So, in turn, it also means that if you win Saturday, you get to close your A-State career with 8 straight home victories.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you?
Man, it just tells how much we've came along as a organization, as a program. It just makes me happy thinking about it because I know how tough it was, the 2-10 and the 3-9 season. Those were not always the best days. It wasn't always fun coming into the building, coming to practice, seeing the coaches after you've already, you know, just got spanked. So it's not really enjoyable coming in. But we all, the people who stayed from the beginning, trusted, you know, the process and what Coach Jones believed in. And I think it's helped over time. So I think the fact that we all trusted it means more because we've been here from the start. So it means everything to me that we've turned this around.
I want to talk about you and your story. It's been quite a journey for you just to get to Arkansas State. Mm-hmm. And I know you finished your high school career in Eufaula, Alabama, but your hometown is listed as Honolulu.
Yes, sir.
But Alabama and Hawaii don't even begin to tell the story. Yeah. So let's talk about all the places you have been, yeah. Manny. Where were you born?
So I was born in Dothan, Alabama, but a month or two after I was born, I moved to Japan, and then I lived there for like 11 years, and then I moved to Hawaii for 6, and then I moved to Bama for my last years of high school.
All right, so... 11 years.
Yeah, it's a long time.
In Japan.
Yeah.
What are your memories of living there? And I'm guessing you speak some Japanese.
I can, you know, pull out some phrases and whatnot, but I can't have a full-blown conversation. But when I used to live there, I used to, like, some of the classes you have to learn Japanese. And, like, I used to live on a military campus, a military base. So we still had to learn Japanese in our classes, but it was still like an Americanized type of base school. So we'll learn the basic American way of learning, but, you know, I still had to learn the Japanese, like, handwriting, the symbols and stuff like that. So it was a different time. I enjoyed it when I was there. I don't remember a lot, but I definitely remember enough to, like, tell a couple stories or whatnot. But I miss Hawaii and Japan, but Japan was definitely different for sure.
Now, this is a weird thing about that, but go with me here. If you're going to live in Japan, but then you're going to live in Alabama,
Yeah. Maybe
Hawaii is the spot to go in between and kind of work your way.
Yeah, because they on the two different sides of the spectrum. Like, Japan is a whole foreign country, and Alabama is, like, one of the deepest parts. And I was living in the deepest part of the South in Eufaula, so it's such a different culture shock. Even from Hawaii to Alabama, it was just – so different. The Southern hospitality is just different from the West Coast and the foreign country, Japan. So it was something to get used to once I moved to Alabama. But I enjoyed all the places I lived for sure. I claim Hawaii the most because that's where most of my friends and memories came from.
Now, your parents were both in the military, or?
My mom was in the beginning, and then she had to get out because I don't know, there's some rule where both the parents of the household can't be in, so she chose not to. And she's a teacher now, a special education teacher. She's in Japan still to this day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. With my little brother and my dad right now. But they're planning on moving out here to North Carolina in like May. So it'll now, be like 2 years since I've seen them.
What branch?
Navy.
And I'm sure they're going to listen to this at some point.
Yeah,
for sure. Want to thank them for their service.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir, for sure. Thank them.
Now, will they be able to come to Senior Day? Will you have some people on hand for that?
Yeah, my grandparents, they'll for sure be here. My daughter, she'll be here. But yeah, my parents, it's too expensive for them to come all the way out here. The last time they came, it was like a couple thousand for them to come. So I appreciate them if they did come, but I don't blame them for not coming. That's too much money. Thank them for sure.
All right, so you moved to Hawaii. Tell us about your experience there. You list that as your hometown, mm-hmm. Honolulu. Was that where you discovered football?
So in Japan, you're not allowed to play tackle football until you're in high school. So I wasn't really playing football for, I was playing flag football most of my life until I got to Hawaii. And then in middle school, you can play for like club teams, but you can't play for the middle school team. So it was a little different. I had to join a club team. So it was my first real time playing tackle football. My parents like to say, like when I was young, I played, but I don't really count that because like I don't remember it and I didn't like it. So I started playing tackle my seventh grade year. And then that's when I started actually like loving the game of football. And then I moved to Bama because it was kind of hard to get recruited in Hawaii, especially when nobody likes to fly all the way out there. And if you're not like going to like a nationally ranked like school that go play mainland schools, it's hard to get looked at and stuff like that. So I moved to Alabama with my grandparents to play football.
You gotta be a lineman to get
recruited. Yeah, you gotta be Polynesian to O-line.
Yeah, Samoan, those linemen. Yeah, they come hard. After them. Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
It worked out for you.
Yes,
ended up going to Alabama and then getting recruited to Arkansas State. So, what was attractive about coming to Jonesboro?
One, Butch Jones, the places he's been, the people he's coached under. I think the main thing was coaching under Nick Saban. Because my whole family's been Alabama fans my whole life. I watched Alabama growing up. Always been a big Julio Jones fan. So I think that factor played in most with them all. Most of the staff, Coach Kwan coming from Alabama as well. So with them coming from there, I feel like they had the knowledge to help me get to where I want to go and learn the things I want to learn. And even with the position change from high school to now, I think I learned a lot coming here.
I was just going to ask, like, what position did you have to play in high school?
So in high school, I played receiver, but I was like a big receiver. I was like 6'4", 220. So, I mean, I'd either have to get faster to play receiver or get bigger. So I knew it was one or the other.
It's easier to get bigger than get faster.
Yeah, way easier. Just got to eat a little bit more. That's cool with me.
Well, you came in and you played right away, though. Mm-hmm. And even as a true freshman, you came in here and you were honorable mention all-conference. You suffered a significant injury, I guess, in the last game of the season. Mm-hmm. So tell everybody what the injury was and just how much work you had to do to come back from that.
Yeah, I tore my ACL, MCL, and my meniscus in my left knee, and it took a lot to come back. Like, I was still already trying to build muscle on top of having to build more muscle with the injury. So it was already hard coming back. But I think with that time, like not being able to play as much as I did my freshman year, it helped me as a person and as a football player. So I don't regret it happening. I think I needed it to grow and be better.
So you spend your life coming up, like you said, once you get to play, it's as a receiver. So you knew kind of your body type, what you're going to need to do. But like when you get to this level, and heck, even if it'd be asking the same question about now, your tight ends, you have to live a double life, kind of. Mm-hmm. So, kinda, yeah. what's the split of your time between like looking at lineman stuff and looking at receiver stuff?
Yeah, it's just really knowing your play style. I'd be watching our own O linemen, how they do certain things, their techniques, how they pass set, how they come off the ball in the run game and stuff like that, just to get a little bit of pointers and stuff like that. I don't really watch specific O linemen, but when it comes to like catching the ball and running routes, I definitely have receivers I watch because I feel like my play style is different from most tight ends. So when I watch other tight ends, I don't see too many similarities in how I do stuff and they do stuff. So I watch more receivers. And I feel like I can relate more to how they play and stuff like that. So, and they're the best at running routes in general. So it's like, why wouldn't I watch the best route runners in the world? So that's really what I do most times. I don't really watch too much O-linemen, but I do a little bit for sure.
I was going to ask you if you had a tight end that you patterned yourself after, but you're looking more at receivers, it sounds like.
Yeah, my favorite tight end to watch because he can do everything is George Kittle. Obviously, we still watch a little bit of Travis Kelce because of Bush Jones and everything, but I feel like he's more of my – if I were to watch a tight end, it would be him because he's more of my play style, my field. I can do everything, I believe, and I feel like he does everything, so I feel like we can just, you know, that's just something I can learn from him for sure.
You were out at the coach's show a couple of weeks ago, and it was neat to see your position coach, Nick Grimes, out there and could tell that he and his family just love you. But I could also tell Tyler Little and Miller McCrumby were both out there, and you guys have been such a big part of the team and the success this year. But I can tell you guys have a really close bond just as a tight ends group.
Yeah. Without them, I wouldn't, you know, be here at all. I feel like they push me to be a better player. We push each other because we all know that we can't embarrass each other no matter what it is. Even within plays, when we watch practice, we always, if somebody mess up, we laugh at each other because we know that nobody wants to be embarrassed on the field. So it helps each other get better. And I know they want the best for me and I want the best for them. So I feel like without them, I wouldn't be here right now.
You know, Saturday, we mentioned it's a big number of guys. And like I said, we'll talk later about the challenge of figuring out how to honor 29 guys. But it is a lot. But yeah. What do you think about, like, between now and then or Saturday? I mean, obviously, thoughts will creep in. What thoughts do you think they'll be?
I'm going to try not to cry, but, you know, can't guarantee nothing. But I definitely think it's just all going to hit me that this is, like, really my last ride. Because I haven't really, you know, thought about it for real. I have just, my parents will bring it up every now and then, but, like, I don't put too much time into thinking about it. But when that moment comes, it's just all going to hit me at once. But I'm just ready for the moment. It's been a long time coming, but it did fly at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I enjoyed every moment, everything with this team. So I appreciate it for sure.
Tell us about your daughter. How has being a dad changed you?
Yeah, it's such a different lifestyle that I appreciate so much now. She, whenever I'm having like a tough time throughout my day or anything, she just brings joy to it, like without even trying to. It's a crazy feeling because I would never, like years before I had her, I'd never imagine me being a dad like this soon. But, you know, it's a blessing in disguise for sure. I love her to death. She makes everything so much more happy and pleasant, and I can get my mind off of football or whatever I got going on every time I talk to her. So yeah, she's really the joy of like my day for sure.
And the best part, couldn't care less if you missed a block or dropped a pass.
That's the main thing, because she'll never ask me about the game. She wants to come to them, but she don't know what's going on. So I feel like that's the part I appreciate the most for sure.
All right, so what's your plans after the season?
Yeah, I'm going to train for the pro day. Hopefully things go good. I expect them to go good. And, yeah, spend time with my family for the most part because I ain't seen them in so long. So spend time, work for the pro day, and just get ready for that.
Oh, man, it's been a lot of fun watching you these last 4 years. And you and I talked about it a couple of weeks ago at the coach's show. You're kind of a rare breed anymore. You're a four-year senior. Yeah. There's not too many of those.
Yeah, that is true for sure. That's crazy.
I know it's gone by quickly, and appreciate you coming in today. Good luck this Saturday. And
thank you.
The rest of the way for you, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate y'all for sure for having me.
Get huge savings now at every Kavanaugh dealership. Kavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Kavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to KavanaughCars.com.
Red Wolf fans, this is DeMario Davis, proud Red Wolf and linebacker for the New Orleans Saints. And I'm asking you to help out our current A-State student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our players by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access you won't find anywhere else. us. Find out more and give today at impactclub.com. Thank you, and Wolves up.
And we welcome you back into the Second to None podcast presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Do want to talk about the details of that victory on Saturday, the big win over ULM, 28-21 in Jonesboro. It was the 15th straight victory over the Warhawks, and this was a game where, yeah, the Red Wolves won by 7, but they did all the little things right to win, and yep, that includes winning the turnover battle, didn't turn the ball over on Saturday. And they were plus 2 in that department. And the 2 turnovers were just massive. You go back to the first half, one play that I know not everybody remembers as far as one of the big plays in the game, but it really was that forced fumble when ULM was driving. It was in the red zone. And Marvin Ham is able to force the fumble, and Trey Thomas ends up recovering that.
You better remember it. I mean, it was a key play in the whole rest of the game.
It really was, especially when you look back and it's decided by one score. But then the other turnover shouldn't surprise anybody at this point that it was Travion Thomas with a game-sealing interception with less than 2 minutes to go. It's just amazing that he's now done this. He's had an interception to help seal a win in each of the last 3 victories. And he's the only player in the country that has done that this year. He also has 5 interceptions on the season now, which is 3rd most in the country. But just huge that the A-State defense was able to come up big again.
Obviously, just the number of interceptions, period, is cool. But then if you take a second, and I know our friend Mark Taylor took more than a second. He took a whole bunch of seconds and minutes and a few hours to dive into it. You know, the only guy to have, you know, I think he put, you know, 3 fourth quarters, or they're all 3. And what his wording was, maybe the opponent's last possession.
Yeah.
So, but they've all come in one score wins, where the opponent's last play of the game is a pass picked off by Travion Thomas.
Yeah, just amazing that he keeps coming up with these huge plays when it matters most. This game also saw a couple of really, really good running backs. And we'll start with ULM's running back, a true freshman named Ahmad Hardy. And it'll be something if ULM can hold on to this guy.
But yeah,
he's led the league in rushing this year, and he's rushed for nearly 1,200 yards and had seen some film on him kind of leading up to the game last week. But, man, that guy is special. And he runs as hard as any running back we faced all season long. And he was tough to stop. But there's a reason he's done what he's done this year.
Yeah, that's not a guy that had a good day. That's a guy that's had a heck of a year, a good player. And clearly we saw on display Saturday, the first guy seldom brings him down.
But there was another really good running back that was in action on Saturday, and he was wearing the right colors. Zach Wallace had 18 carries for 130 yards and a touchdown. He now has 9 rushing touchdowns on the season, 47 in his career. And I thought one of the big stats in this ball game, we talked about the turnover margin. That was one big stat. But the other one, 4th downs. The Red Wolves were 3 for 3 on 4th down, and they're now 4th in the country in 4th down conversion percentage. And it's not like we're doing this once a game. We're doing this several times a game going forward on 4th down, and you put yourself in these 4th and short opportunities. And when you have Zach Wallace running behind the top graded center in the entire country and the rest of that A-State offensive line, talking about Jacob Bear and that O-line, then I'm going to take my chances every time on 4th and short.
Yeah, to tie into that, you know, you're speaking specifically of 4th down, but, you know, we talked a lot about this last week. For as great a year as Clune Van Andel is having, and he's having a really good one, and we talked about it, I love him kicking extra points, and that's all he kicked Saturday, 4 of them. And so his team, again, as we talked about in the Georgia State win, when they got to the red zone, they got to the end zone.
Thought Jalen Rayner had a really nice day. He was 18 of 26 for 170 yards and 3 touchdowns. And look, he's not putting up just huge numbers as far as passing yards, but they're not asking him to right now. With the way this team's starting to run the football, and you go back the last handful of games, A-State's really putting up a lot of rushing yards. This is a very balanced offense right now, but Jalen has been fantastic, and I thought that was one of his better games the other day. But again, the Red Wolves, with the victory over ULM, improved to 7-4 overall, 5-2 in Sunbelt Conference play. And we'll take a look at the big matchup with Old Dominion on Senior Day coming up here in a little bit. Meanwhile, do want to talk about the volleyball team and what a season they've had after winning the Sunbelt regular season title. They competed in the Sunbelt tournament in Foley, Alabama over the weekend. Started on Friday. They played in the quarterfinals against Coastal Carolina. Won the first two sets. Dropped the next two, but able to win in five against the Chanticleers. Then they swept Georgia Southern in the semifinals on Saturday, but fell short to Texas State in the championship match. Still, what an incredible ride for this volleyball team. They're now 26-5, and now we're going to hold on and see if they can get an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. And I know the RPI, latest RPI rankings came out early on Monday and had A-State at 51.
Right. It's one of those deals, to put in basketball terms, where we have to watch and you don't need bid stealers. Like, at this point, they're pulling for every favorite to win conference tournaments. Because I think, you know, Mark Taylor again was telling me that we played the first conference tournament in the country. Almost all the rest of them are this week.
Yeah.
So you got to do a lot of sitting and waiting. You know, last year, at least two teams, now they were power four conference teams, and don't act like it doesn't make a difference, because it does, but two teams with RPIs higher than 51 got at-large bids last year. I think UCLA and Kansas State were both like 55 and 59, somewhere in that neighborhood. They got at-large bids last year. So, I mean, this team, to sell that seat, squarely on the bubble, don't need a lot of upsets this week in conference tournaments, and you'll see what happens on Selection Sunday for volleyball coming up this week.
Also last week, some big honors for the volleyball program, and you would expect that after 26 wins and a regular season championship, but our buddy Brian Gerwig named Sunbelt Conference Coach of the Year. We sat here last week and said we'd be shocked if he didn't win that.
It'd be criminal.
After being picked next to last in the Western Division to go on and do what they did this year. Also, Sarah Martinez was named First Team All-Conference and Sunbelt Conference Libero of the Year. Deidreana Kale, First Team All-Conference, Sunbelt Conference Newcomer of the Year, and Defensive Player of the Year. And Caitlin Whitlock, Second Team All-Conference selection. What do all those names have in common?
Well, I know the answer because I was sitting here thinking of it before I even glanced ahead and saw you had that question. The thing they have in common is everyone on that list has been a guest on this podcast.
Don't think there's any coincidence there. All four of them have been guests on this podcast. And, of course, you can always go back and listen to those visits. But, happy for all of those recipients. And Coach Gerwig and his team just having a phenomenal year. Whether they go to the NCAA tournament or not, just what they accomplished this season was off the charts.
I feel like they've got more volleyball in front of them either way. But like I said, they certainly have a reason to gather and watch the selection show as this week unfolds.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same. You first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact, spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T, club.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helpful helping our programs right now. Wolves up.
And we welcome you back one more time to the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. How about the season for Jacob Pyatt? He competed at the NCAA Championships in Madison, Wisconsin on Saturday. Ended up finishing 102nd. That was out of 255 runners. That finish was the best by an A-State runner at that event, at Nationals, in 55 years. Got to go back to 1969 since the Red Wolves, then Indians, had a finish that good. And it's the best finish ever for a Red Wolf since they moved the championships to a 10K. So congratulations to Jacob Pyatt. You're talking about phenomenal seasons. He was Sunbelt Conference Men's Runner of the Year, finished seventh at regionals, but a big-time accomplishment for him. Men's basketball just had one game last week. They played their only non-Division I opponent of the season as they hosted Lane College on Friday night, won the game 103-60. This Red Wolves team has been winning games with defense. We knew at some point the offense was going to start clicking, and I think they took a big step in the right direction with the 103 points the other night, but they shot 51% from the floor, and they made 18 threes, which was two off a school record. So they're 4-1 now. Really, really excited about the true freshman, Justin Johnson. He's going to be a phenomenal player for us. 20 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. I think I saw where he's the first freshman to have a 25-5 game since Brandon Reed. That year he was Sunbelt Conference Freshman of the Year back in 2010. Avery Feltz with a big night. He was 5 of 6 from 3, finished with 15 points. Joseph Pinion, 15 points and 8 boards. And Cody Head, I thought, played really well. 9 points, 8 assists, and 6 rebounds. He had a plus 38 plus-minus ratio on the night.
It's also interesting. One thing I noticed at times I was able to kind of watch, you know, Cody get out there. And I say this because, like, it goes in, so it's not like it's not a knock, but like his shots don't rotate. Almost like you would call a knuckleball. It just stays in that same position and goes in.
Yeah, as long as it works.
Yeah, right. That's the end result that matters. And I think, look, Coach Hodson has talked a lot about, he made no bones about he doesn't want to schedule non-division ones. So when he did, that tells me he didn't have much of an option if he wanted to play another game before they go to the Bahamas. And so the biggest thing I think his team got out of this, besides, you know, some guys getting some good minutes that maybe hadn't gotten the opportunity to in the last couple of games, but the biggest thing overall is, like I said, they got to see the ball go in the net, which you had not done at the clip they're used to yet. So maybe that could be the springboard that carries over into this week and beyond.
You mentioned this week, it's a big week for A-State basketball. They travel to the Bahamas. 3 games in 3 days starting on Friday. Team's actually going to travel on Wednesday to Nassau, but they'll play Friday at 3:30 against Indiana State. Then they'll take on Rice Saturday at 6, and then we'll play the final game of that tournament Sunday at 3:30 against Hofstra. All formidable opponents.
Yeah.
And this will be a good challenge for the Red Wolves in this tournament. A little programming note, we'll have the Friday and Sunday games on the entire EAB Red Wolves Sports Network. The Saturday game will be on the Ticket Radio Network. But as always, you can hear all 3 of those games on all the apps, the A-State Athletics app, the EAB Media app, or the Varsity Network app. Of course, 3 games that I will not be calling because I'll be here for football. It's a lot of fun booking somebody else's Bahamas travel.
Well, I'm
sending
them
to a tropical location.
This worked out well for me last year, but not as much this time.
Well, I sent you to Palm Springs last year. Now sending Cade Carlton to the Bahamas. Yeah, I never miss a trip to Monroe or Troy. But, yeah, you're right. Women's basketball did play a couple of games last week. They dropped both of them. Lost a tight one at Xavier on Tuesday, 45-41. Then they led at the half at Arkansas on Sunday, but ended up falling in that one 76-60.
Yeah, same thing. I think the learning curve for this team, we talked about it even last week before these games is that, and listen, I say it because I think they'll get there, is that they're going to have to learn to win, you know, without scoring 100 points. I mean, they're averaging 107 points and they're two wins. And so you got to have kind of one more than one way to get a win. And I honestly think the Arkansas game was a step in the right direction there because Xavier was one of those teams, again, that just kind of wasn't going to let you score 100. And so that game's in the 40s, and that's not been that this team's comfort zone. So I think they will evolve. I do think that. And certainly we've seen that when somebody is willing to kind of get out and just run with them, they're a big-time handful.
Women's hoops now 2-3 on the season. And they got a little bit of a break, a little over a week-long break. They won't play again until Tuesday, December 3rd, when they head down to the Stevens Center to take on Little Rock. And maybe this is the trip. We'll win that first ever game at the Stevens Center.
Well, you're probably not scoring 100.
That's not the way they tend to let you play. So you're going to have
to do it a different way. But I'm with you. I'm confident that this could be the one.
All right. Now, time for football. We mentioned the seniors, 29 seniors being honored before the game.
As we sit here recording this, I'll tell you, that part's not as fun. I'm trying to figure out how to carve out and how to do a senior day with 29 guys.
Yeah, we need to keep the script short as far as the introductions go, but that's a big chunk of time.
It's going to be like 29. Marla Hooch, what a hitter. Just on to the next Marla Hooch.
A lot of things at stake here. You've got a chance to pick up win number 8, a chance to complete an undefeated home season. And that is something that is really rare. And I know you've run the numbers on this, but I can tell you it hasn't happened around here in 13 years,
right,
since that 2011 season, since we've had an undefeated home season. With all the great seasons we've had between 2011 and now, that's the last time.
There are four teams between then and now who have won conference championships that didn't go 6-0 at home and won a Sun Belt title. And this team's got a chance to go 6-0 at home for the first time, like you said, since 2011. Out of 110 seasons of A-State football, there's only been 11 regular seasons with 8 or more wins.
Wow.
Out of 110 seasons. And in the last 50 years, since they've been playing in what's now the Vault, it's only happened 7 times. There's only been 14 times. Actually, I want to back that up. There's only been 10 times that we've gone through a season in the history of the program unbeaten and untied at home, because there were, you know, ties used to be a little more prevalent. So to go unbeaten and untied at home's only happened 10 times in the history of the program. And, you know, one of only 8 teams right now in the group of 5, one of only 20 in the country who are unbeaten at home this year. So it's a pretty exclusive company. It's almost, sometimes I feel like this team has to apologize for winning, which is an interesting kind of dynamic that's just evolved over the way. But they've won at a clip that not a lot of teams around here have, and they've got a chance to do some special things Saturday.
And they're going to have to do it against an Old Dominion team that, as Coach Jones said on the TV show on Sunday, is the best 4-7 team in the United States of America. Because you look at what they've done this year, 6 of their 7 losses are by one score. They're 2-6 in one score game. So
where Arkansas State 6-0.
Yeah, that's interesting. So we'll see what kind of fight Old Dominion has. I know they're not bowl eligible or don't have a chance to be bowl eligible at this point after another close loss against Marshall this past weekend. But this is a good football team coming in here on Saturday. We're going to need all the support we can get. Final chance to catch these Red Wolves at home. And again, another 2 o'clock kickoff. 2 o'clock kickoff. Our coverage on the radio side begins at noon. But we need everybody to get
Absolutely
there that can
do.
Be there.
And last week, listen, there were some interesting things. Like it was and it's okay. It was a late arriving crowd, which is fine. They got in there. But here's what happened. I was confident this is what was going to happen, and I told a lot of people this is what I thought would happen. I said, when it's all said and done, would this crowd be the same size as most of the ones before it this year? Probably not. But you know what it's going to be? They're going to be as loud or louder than some of the crowds have been at times this year. Because you've got your people who are really your kind of your ride or dies. The people who are really with you are there.
Yeah.
And they're going to make noise. And they did. Even stood up sometimes for my spots where I could see down on third downs and seeing more people the higher percentage of people than you're used to seeing standing up and making noise. And we've talked about before, I mean, there are parts of me that really love crowds the size we had Saturday because they bring it. And I think we'll have even a little bigger crowd this week. I think they'll bring it again. And hopefully, you know, you spread the word if you're listening to this to kind of, you know, I think the 2010s kind of skewed our judgment and assessment of certain things. Winning 8 games in a regular season doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
And it's to be celebrated. And as we talked about, going undefeated at home doesn't happen very often. All those things can happen Saturday if we all pitch in and help get this team across the finish line in the regular season.
And a chance to celebrate a really, really special senior class that has some great leaders that have really helped lay the foundation for what Coach Jones has tried to do here. So, yeah, plenty of reasons to come on out.
There absolutely are, yeah. And, oh, and, you know, these I'm going to talk promo items real quick. I don't know if you've seen it, if it's been on social media yet based on when you're listening to this, but I think the promotional item is going to be one that people are going to be kind of excited about because the vast majority of our fans have not really ever had an opportunity to get apparel or anything with the Run and Howl logo on it.
Okay.
And that's the giveaway item Saturday is a t-shirt with Run and Howl on the front.
All right.
And our friends at Coca-Cola are the game sponsor. They're helping make those shirts possible. Plus, we got another run of the Serve Pro, the youth shirts we did with Serve Pro that look like the black jersey. We've got another run of those we're going to give out while they last, too. So we got a giveaway for kids. We got a giveaway for adults. And like I said, I think it's one people are going to be interested in getting because, like I said, most people haven't had a crack at that logo yet. So your first one comes up Saturday when the gates open at noon.
It's been a fun episode. Appreciate Manny Stevenson for coming in and joining us. Appreciate Jerry Scott setting that up for us. For Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week and a very happy Thanksgiving.